So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first speaker today, this afternoon. David Corton is the author of several books, including the international bestseller, When Corporations Rule the World. His new book, Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth, will be released next year. David is co-founder and board chair of one of our sponsors, Yes Magazine, and founder slash president of the Living Economies Forum. He is the lead author of two reports, How to Liberate America from Wall Street Rule, and Jobs, A Main Street Fix for Wall Street's Failure, published by the New Economy Working Group, for which he is co-chair. He holds an MBA and PhD degrees from the Stanford Business School, has 30 years of experience as a development professional in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and has served as a Harvard Business School professor, a captain in the U.S. Air Force, a Ford Foundation project specialist, and a regional advisor to the U.S. Agency for International Development. Please help me welcome Dr. David Corton.
Thank you, Phil. We've covered a lot of ground here in this conference. We've exposed a lot of environmental and justice issues, and we'd offered a great many solutions. Yesterday, Dennis Hayes urged us to be bold. He spoke of the movement that decades ago, within the space of little more than a year, made the politically impossible the politically unstoppable. That was extraordinary. I mean, I lived through that period, but I wasn't, recalling just how extraordinary that was. We must now do the same, even as we act with clear recognition and understanding of the source of the tragedy now unfolding. Pedro and I are assigned in this session the task of providing a unifying frame for understanding the deeper source of the problems we have addressed here, and to outline a unifying vision of possibility. And we will be bold, right, Pedro? The frame I will be presenting is elaborated in my forthcoming book, which Phil mentioned, Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth. And you could sign up back at the Yes table after the session to get the information on that, as well as the Yes newsletter. And I want to mention, I know there are many fans of Yes Magazine here, and I just want to introduce my wife, Fran Corton, who is the publisher, in case you want to speak with the real head of the organization. As I reflect on our discussions here, I'm reminded of the story of the man standing by the river. He's looking out and he sees a baby floating down the river, struggling for its life. He does the obvious thing. He jumps in and pulls it out. But he just gets the baby up on the bank, and there's another baby in the river. So he jumps in and pulls that one. Baby after baby after baby. So busy, he never has a chance to look upstream to see who's throwing the babies in the water. When I was a business student more than 50 years ago, our professors constantly admonished us. When something goes wrong in your organization, obviously you've got to fix it. But at the same time, look upstream. That problem you encountered is a symptom of a system failure. Identify that system failure and fix that so the problem just doesn't keep repeating. We are dealing with a monumental global system failure, centered in institutions that do not serve and ultimately must be replaced. Unless we deal with that reality, our efforts amount to trying to bail out a ship that is sinking fast because it has a hole in the bottom that's a lot bigger than our bailing bucket. That systemic failure centers on values and power. The fact that we have yielded power to corporations that, by their structure, value life only as a means to make money. Marginal adjustments to that system, say a few regulations here and there, or saving a few unfortunates from the ravages of corporate greed, might slightly slow the damage. They will not change the outcome. The corporations that currently drive our economy are doing exactly what they are designed to do. Concentrate financial wealth in the hands of the few at the expense of the many and nature. A viable and truly prosperous human future depends on a deep cultural and institutional transformation. The first step is to make a clear choice between money and life as our defining value. In one of his many insightful homilies, Pope Francis spoke of the idolatry of money, the worship of a false god. That is exactly where we are stuck. For contemporary society, making money has become life's purpose, shopping a civic duty, financial markets our moral compass, institutions of finance our temples, and economists the priests who provide absolution for our personal and collective sins against life. Choosing money over life, we acquiesce to rule by global financial markets, gamed by high-speed computers that in turn control the money-seeking corporate robots that strip away the moral sensibility of those in their employ and that view people and nature as commodities to monopolize and exploit for financial gain. At their core, the issues are deeply spiritual. They have roots in our answers to the most basic of questions. From where have we come and why? What is the nature of the universe that gave birth to Earth that in turn gave birth to us? For what purpose were we born? According to the conventional teaching of the Abrahamic religions and its contemporary distortions, we are the creations of a distant patriarch, an all-powerful, all-knowing God who lives in a far place called heaven and rewards our obedience with a place of eternal bliss by his side in the afterlife. Whatever exists is by his will. He wants us to be rich, and he rewards us favored with wealth and power. So get with the program. Go for the money. By the conventional teaching of a science that remains stuck in the frame of an old and outdated story, we are the product of a mechanical universe that is much like a big clock, playing out its destiny as its mighty spring unwinds toward ultimate heat, death. By this reckoning, life is merely an accidental outcome of material complexity and has no meaning or purpose. Consciousness is simply an artifact of physical processes in the brain. Free will is an illusion. Wow. That's depressing. I think I'll go shopping. We end up living by what we might call a sacred money and market story, constantly repeated by corporate media and by our corporatized educational institutions. We are assured that money is wealth. Making money creates wealth. Making money is the defining purpose of individuals, business, and the economy. Those who make money are society's wealth creators. Their affluent lifestyles are their just reward. Material consumption is our path to happiness. We humans are by nature individualistic competitors. Fortunately, the invisible hand of the free market turns our individual greed into maximum well-being for all. Inequality and environmental damage are regrettable. They are, however, simply the necessary and unavoidable collateral damage of a growing GDP that ultimately creates prosperity for all. Stick with it. Eventually, economic growth will create the financial wealth essential to end poverty. And to drive the technological innovation that will free us from our cruel and confining dependence on nature. If you've ever heard this story before, raise your hand. Is there anybody that hasn't heard this story before? How many of you have noticed that it's every assertion is false? This goes a long way to explaining why we're in such deep trouble. It is a fabricated story that promotes and legitimates the idolatry of money and corporate rule. It is bad ethics, bad science, and bad economics, even though it's taught in most of our economics courses. The devastating consequences become ever more evident. We tend to accept it because it is the only story we hear. Those of us who seek justice, environmental sustainability, and peace organize around issues rather than a unifying story. Commonly, we make our case within the sacred money and markets story frame. For example, when we argue that greater equality would be good because it will accelerate economic growth, rather than, of course, the obvious equality would be better because it is better. It is healthier. We are all happier and healthier and have more well-being when we live in relatively equal societies. It's actually a scientifically proven fact. But we turn to the corrupt story because we who honor life, who seek a life-serving society, have no unifying counter-story of our own. Who controls the story controls the future. Now, there's a sign of a profound cultural awakening. The essential elements of a sacred life and living earth story are beginning to emerge, and is a story with deep spiritual roots. We humans are living beings born of a living earth. Earth, our home, our source of nurture. Real wealth is living wealth. Money is just a number. Money is useful as a medium of exchange, but nothing more. Life exists only in community. We prosper only as Earth prospers. We all do best when we all do well in a world that works for all. And fortunately, it is in fact our human nature to care and to share to the benefit of all, which we know from our daily experience as well as from confirmation from science. Individualistic violence, greed, ruthless competition, these surely exist, but they are indicators of deep individual and social dysfunction. The purpose of the economy and its institutions is to provide all people with the opportunity to make a healthy, meaningful living in a balanced, co-productive relationship with Earth's community of life. This story provides a framing vision for a living economy that is rooted in community, works with nature, meets the needs of all, and gives every person a voice in the decisions on which their well-being and that of the whole depend. The counter to the sacred money and market story is grounded in a realization that as contemporary science actually describes the unfolding of the universe, it is far more like a seed bursting forth and growing into a grand and beautiful flowering tree than it is to a mechanical clock winding down. The living seed description is consistent with the living universe cosmology that suggests, in line with the insights of the mystics, that all of creation is the manifestation of a conscious spiritual intelligence seeking to know itself by manifesting in a creative journey of self-discovery as it unfolds toward ever greater complexity, beauty, awareness, and possibility. By the reckoning of this story, all beings, stars, energy particles, star systems, planets, humans, grains of sand, animals, plants, rocks, and rivers are both expression and agent of the Spirit, each with its place and purpose in a process that reveals an extraordinary capacity for intelligent, purposeful self-organization at all system levels. In the early stages of Earth's evolutionary journey, the simplest of life forms worked with the forces of Earth's geological processes to transform every aspect of Earth's crust, waters, and atmosphere to create and maintain the conditions distinctive to Earth and essential to the emergence of more complex life forms, like, say, humans. This extraordinary partnership now continuously regenerates Earth's soils, rivers, aquifers, fisheries, forests, grasslands, and much more to sustain the life of the whole. All the while, this wondrous self-organizing community maintains a climatic balance, temperature, and chemical composition of Earth's oceans, landmass, and atmosphere wholly unlike the conditions of our planetary neighbors. Equally extraordinary, over billions of years, Earth's diverse species filtered excess carbons and toxins from Earth's air, waters, and soils to sequester them deep underground. In so doing, they created environmental conditions suited to the birth of a species with a capacity for conscious, creative, self-reflective choice far beyond any other. Now, in a collective trance induced by the idolatrous sacred money and market story, we of that species devote our best minds and technologies to extracting and releasing those sequestered carbons and toxins back into Earth's atmospheres, waters, and soils to suppress Earth's natural processes to make money, which exists only as numbers on computer hard drives. And we think we are so much more intelligent than other Earth species. The work of our time is to learn to live with appropriate humility in alignment with the structures and processes of living Earth. Those who work in the service of money-seeking corporate robots that value money more than life control the story by which we organize as a society. We who choose to live in service to life must find our story and bring that story to the fore of the human consciousness. Of all our institutions, the Jesuit universities may be the best position to lead us in finding our story. The sacred life and living Earth story is a story in the making. It provides a potential unifying story frame for all the initiatives described during this conference and much more. Fully developed, it has the potential to give our lives deep meaning, purpose, and direction. It is an elaborated version of the story I believe lives in the human heart. And I believe it has the authentic power to expose and displace the sacred money and market story as the framing story of human society. Let us embrace this moment as an opportunity to claim and express our true nature as living beings inhabiting a living earth born of a living universe. Let us accept responsibility for our self-aware agency and learn the arts of living in conscious, interconnected, and evolving world. Let us rethink and restructure our institutions to align power with life as we seek our place of contribution to creation's continued unfolding. Our future is ours to choose. Change the story. Change the future. We're the ones we've been waiting for.